This is a recording of the open meeting held by the Federal Election Commission on November 5, 2009. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The first matter is a draft advisory opinion at 2009-25, and we have some late submitted documents. Mr. Vice Chairman, do you have a motion on, with respect to those?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider agenda documents 09-71, 09-71-A, and 09-71-B.
Okay, thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes 6-0. We'll begin with the draft advisory opinion. Council?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Jennifer Brunner Committee, the principal campaign committee of U.S. Senate candidate Jennifer Brunner, requested an advisory opinion, and you have before you agenda document numbers 09-71, 09-71A, and 09-71B, which provide four possible responses designated as draft A, draft B, draft C, and draft D. The committee wishes to acquire and use certain assets, including computers and other office equipment purchased by Ms. Brunner's state campaign committee and left in the offices of the former state committee's landlord when the state committee was terminated in reliance on an interpretation of a provision of Ohio law. In lieu of purchasing these assets directly from the now defunct state committee, the committee proposes to acquire the assets from the landlord by paying the fair market value of the assets to between 1 and 3 Section 170C charitable organizations designated by the landlord. The committee asks whether the proposal is permissible under commission regulations. Draft A concludes that the proposal as presented is not permissible under the regulations because it would result in an excessive in-kind contribution, but that the committee may pay the landlord directly for the assets. Draft B concludes that the proposal as presented is permissible under the regulations, and no in-kind contribution would result. For different reasons, Draft C also concludes that the proposal as presented is permissible so long as the committee pays the fair market value of the assets to the charities. Draft D concludes that the proposal as presented is impermissible under the regulations because it would result in an impermissible transfer of assets to the committee. We received two comments from the requester, one on Drafts A, B, and C, and one on Draft D. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. I would like to take a step here that's a little unusual, and that's to augment our record based upon communications that we've had with counsel for the requester. I believe it's counsel for the requester, counsel for the requester. And we have communications that have occurred, and since we rely on those communications, whether they occur by telephone or email or fax, then I think we need to make those part of the record. In this case, I think they're relevant. So I was wondering if we could begin. I do have a memorandum that I'm looking at that contains some of that. As I understand it, it wasn't necessarily committed to writing at the time, but there's a fairly clear understanding of the communication that took place, and so I'd call on Ms. Smith to maybe augment the record as best you can.
I'd be happy to do so, Mr. Chairman. We, as the draft, I believe, reflects, there have been telephone conversations with between commission attorneys and counsel for the requester, Mr. Quinn. I believe they go back to initially June of this year. And I do think that I do think the representations that are made in these various drafts are accurate reflections of representations that counsel for the requester has made to commission attorneys in the various conversations going back to June.
All right. Now, I did receive a memorandum from someone on staff today that might dispute that, if I'm not mistaken. And I just wondered if there was a concern as to whether or not the staff member made permanent recommendation.
Mr. Chairman?
I think perhaps you're misunderstanding each other.
I think we might be.
I think so too. I think what Ms. Smith is trying to say is that all of the representations in the draft, including draft D, are based on communications that our staff had with the requester. I think that's right.
I mean, I do think maybe some questions arise because of the comment that was submitted by the requester's counsel just yesterday that that now disputes some statements that are in the draft.
That's correct. And so I did want to ask, as I understand it, we did receive some comments from counsel that seemed to be at odds with the communications that were earlier made with counsel, if I understand it correctly.
That's right.
And I was just going to ask you to point those out.
Oh, okay.
So that we have a clear record in that regard.
Well, I think that there are a couple. Bear with me as I get the what the comments are. I think the statement in the requester's letter dated November 4th that the computers in question here apparently never had been used by the state committee. My understanding of it is that an attorney from our staff was initially told that at the time the state committee went out of business that those computers were still in their unopened boxes. And so I believe that was the basis for some of the representations in draft D. I think there is the other one is with regard to the language in draft D about the state committee leaving the remaining assets behind in the office space that it was renting from Secretary Bruner's husband's law firm. That was also based on a conversation that an attorney in our staff had with the requester's counsel. Again, I think it was in the same conversation back in June that our understanding was that those assets were there. They were on the property. The state committee, I think, as you know, went out of business, and so then when the federal committee came into being, those assets would be available, and that was what gave rise to some of the questions that the requester asked us about entering into this agreement to purchase them.
Okay. The
and I guess in turn gave rise to the question that is before us as to, was it abandoned? Was it intended to be some kind of a gift? Those sorts of issues.
All right. Well, thank you for doing the best you can to bring us current on it. Is there a discussion at this point on the Commissioner McGann?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The request as written, I think requires some analysis, and there's quite a few moving parts to get to a yes, but I think it is a yes as written. However, I share the chairman's concern. The concern implicit in his comments and his questions of counsel, in that given what was actually requested versus how the matter has evolved, coupled with the recently filed comments, it seems like there's a moving target here. And it's less than clear to me that the facts as presented are really the facts. Now, we're supposed to take AOs as presented and not really take discovery and that sort of thing, but there does come a point, I think, where you start scratching your head. And that's what I'm left doing in this case, because you have a state campaign, which, as I understand it, terminated. They had some computers. It was going to be left with the landlord, and then the federal campaign was sort of going to inherit that, but they were going to pay a charity. There are a lot of moving parts, and if you connect all those dots, it all connects, I think, that you don't have soft money being used by a federal campaign. There's nothing expressly prohibited and all that, and as far as and you can see that by the number of drafts, there's several ways to get to yes. Because this is a sort of series of transactions that don't fit neatly into what we think of as ordinary campaign transactions. Doesn't mean it's illegal, but here I think the chairman has put his finger on an important issue, which is it seems that the target is moving, and my sense is although my sense is most of us can get to yes on some set of facts, I don't think the commission as a whole is comfortable giving a yes based upon what we know. So Mr. Chairman, procedurally, I'm not sure at this point there's enough commissioners comfortable with affirmatively voting for or against anything. And my sense is the commission cannot render an opinion on this because there's not a majority of the commission comfortable with giving them an affirmative answer, and anything short of that is it becomes a distinction without a difference whether or not there's, you know, two, three, four that are on the fence or whatnot. Unless there's four saying yes, it ends up devolving into the same result. So my sense is we may be to a point where, although in the abstract I say yes to this. My sense is there's not enough of my colleagues that are there, so it may be better to make a motion to instruct counsel to prepare a letter saying the commission could not render an opinion or something along those lines. I leave it to my colleagues, but I don't want to prolong this with splitting out who's for what draft at this point, because my sense is that we all share the same concern you raised.
Thank you. Any further comment? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was trying to figure out a way to answer this person's question. Part of the reason that we have so many drafts is that I think different commissioners found different aspects of this more or less troubling. I was very uncomfortable with any analysis that would result in the payment going to the landlord. And I think that the way they structured, they were trying to avoid that because in my mind, that does raise personal use issues. And I think they recognize that, you know, points to them for that. It's always struck me that this was a very convoluted transaction that they were proposing. And I was hoping that we were going to have counsel available to us over the phone, and maybe we could resolve some of the questions that are outstanding and be in a position to answer the question that way. But counsel is not available to talk to us. I mean, obviously, they're not local, so it would have to be by phone. But they communicated with us this morning and said they were not going to be available by phone. So we're not in a position to resolve any outstanding questions. And I do find myself in the situation where I'm just not comfortable voting for something because I'm not entirely sure exactly what all the facts are. I will offer, you know, a little bit of free advice for you know, they're not asking for my legal advice, but I'm going to offer it to them anyway as a way out of this situation if they are seeking one outside of getting an advisory opinion from us. It seems to me that I'm not an expert on Illinois law, but I assume under Illinois law they could take these computers. We're in Illinois, aren't we?
Ohio.
Sorry, the other one's Illinois. My apologies. Under Ohio law, I assume that whoever owns these computers could donate them to a school or some other charitable organization. And clearly the federal committee doesn't need our permission to go out and buy computers at fair market value. They can go to Best Buy or go online or wherever they want to. That was not an endorsement of Best Buy. You know, wherever they want to buy their computers, they can buy their computers at fair market value. And at the end of the day, you know, the money or the equivalent resources that were left with the state committee would end up with charity, which appears to be what they're trying to accomplish, and the federal committee would end up with computers. So I think there is a way for them to get to where they want to go without even seeking our advice. And I offer that to them for what it's worth, because it does not look like we're going to be able to render an answer to them today.
Thank you for the comment. Commissioner McGann.
I agree that's certainly one way to skin this cat, that to get them where they want to go. Certainly, because counsel's not here, we're not drawing any sort of negative inference, but we are left with what we have. And I took that as what your comments were indicating, that we're kind of stuck, and it seems like there have been a little bit of a couple moving targets on the facts. My sense, pure speculation, is this seems more of something that is done for tax purposes than Federal Election Campaign Act purposes, when you see this many transactions and charitable donations and that sort of thing. But that's beyond our jurisdiction and beyond any sort of that has no place in our analysis. But it's an unorthodox transaction. Doesn't mean it's illegal. And there's more than one way to get them to reach their goal. But here, it's tough. And does that promote a tech support or oppose Best Buy?
It was not intended to do so.
Okay, couldn't resist. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further comment by any other commissioner? Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, I share the concerns raised by my colleagues. While I had been prepared to support Draft B, I think, and frankly, I think we do take their request or at their word. I don't think we need to delve into a transaction that occurred in the past if they present us with facts. Unfortunately, it appears that the facts have changed. Whether it's, as my colleague said, it's a moving target. So unfortunately, I think today we have more questions than we had last week, and we don't have an opportunity to resolve them. So I think the appropriate step for us to take is to not provide an answer on when we don't have the facts that we need to reach a conclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was prepared to originally to support Draft B as well. And I think if the facts as presented in that draft were accurate, then I think that unorthodox, yes, but I didn't see anything that necessarily prohibited it. But I would echo the same sentiments that my colleagues have shared about that when there seems to have been, or at least there seems to be some confusion as to what the facts are and with respect to the information that requester has submitted to counsel's office as this process has moved along, it seems like now there is sufficient confusion about what the actual facts are that it would be premature and probably not advisable at this point to go forward and vote on a draft. And so it sounds like there may be consensus on the commission about where we should move to next.
That makes four commissioners so far. Commissioner Hunter, any comments? I did propose draft D. For my concerns, I was not prepared to go forward from the outset. But I think perhaps the best thing to do at this point is just to advise counsel that we're not prepared to move further on this and see where that takes us. So would someone like to make a motion to that effect? Mr. Vice Chairman.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. The motion passes 6-0.
Just to clarify, we're instructing counsel to prepare a letter that the commission was unable to render an opinion, right?
Yes.
I think that's how I heard the motion, and that's what I was voting for. Did council understand that, that way?
That was my understanding.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Mr. Bowley?
Thank you. I misspoke just a few minutes ago in case anyone was counting on drafts. The draft that I had planned on supporting was actually draft A, although I can no longer do so given that we don't have the facts in front of us.
Okay, thank you. The next matter will be, thank you, Council. Draft advisory opinion 2009-26, Illinois State Representative Elizabeth Colson, Colson for Congress, Colson Campaign Committee. Mr. McGinley is here. How are you, Mr. McGinley? Good morning.
Good, how are you?
Good. Council, we're ready to proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, we have agenda documents that were late submitted.
Yes, we do. I apologize. Mr. Vice Chairman, do you have a motion on late submitted documents?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider agenda documents number 09-73, 09-73-A, and 09-73-C.
Thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda documents 0973, 0973A, and 0973C, which replaces agenda document 0973B, respond to a request for advisory opinion filed on behalf of Illinois State Representative Elizabeth Colson, Colson for Congress, and State Representative Colson's State Campaign Committee. Elizabeth Colson is an Illinois State Representative and a federal candidate for the United States House of Representatives in 2010. She plans to sponsor a seniors' fair in her state legislative district and to promote the fair by mailing a postcard to seniors residing in her state district. She also plans to mail a letter to healthcare professionals in her state district describing legislative developments in the Illinois legislature. State Representative Coulson asks whether her state campaign committee or her state office account may pay for these activities. Alternatively, she asks whether her federal committee can pay for them. There are three drafts before you. Drafts A, B, and C. All three drafts conclude that State Representative Colson may use state campaign committee funds or state office holder funds to pay for these activities, but the drafts follow a different approach to this conclusion. Draft B additionally concludes that the funds used to pay for the postcards publicizing the seniors' fair and the healthcare legislative update letter would constitute an in-kind contribution to State Representative Colson's federal campaign committee. The Commission received one comment on the advisory opinion request and none on the advisory opinion drafts. I'll be happy to address any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. Any comments from commissioners? Well, we have enough drafts out there. There should be some comments. As I understand it, there is a consensus building around one, so perhaps we should maybe move in that direction. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if it would be appropriate, since draft C, which seems to be the document that there seems to be a consensus building around, I was wondering, since this did come out rather late, if it would be appropriate that we inquire of counsel whether or not he's had a chance to read and review that and to make sure that you've actually seen it before you stepped in this room today.
Mr. Vice Chairman,
you would have to have been up most of the night to have got this, but yes, sure you probably were.
My World Series viewing, but I was able to take a look at it.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
Okay, Mr. Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I struggled with this, and I appreciate my colleagues' indulgence as I continued to struggle with this up to about midnight last night. What if we change this word? I came to this with the concern that, I think of these as two drafts because one of them kind of supersedes an earlier draft, and they take slightly different paths. I think that both drafts are reasonable ways of skinning this cat, to use an expression that one of my colleagues likes. I'm going to support draft C. One of my animating concerns here was that we not put ourselves in a position, and this is come up from time to time in my tenure here, and I've always had this concern, that we not put ourselves in a position to supervise state office holders in the conduct of their official duties. I don't think we can make that our job. Representative Colson is proposing to do is sort of standard state office holder stuff. And I was concerned that if we went down a different path, we might find ourselves necessarily having to review every constituent mailing that every state office holder sent out once they declared federal candidacy. And, you know, it's not that unusual for us to get a state candidate or a state office holder who then decides to run for federal office. Right now we're already inside the window on coordination, but we're obviously in the process of doing a rulemaking on coordination that would expand the kinds of communications that would be covered outside the window. And I think potentially we could have found ourselves in a place where we would literally have to review all the constituent mail that gets sent out by every state office holder who happens to be running for federal office. And I just found that to be an untenable place for us to be. It's not my job to tell state office holders how to do their jobs. The issue that is raised, I mean, both of these opinions sort of ring bells for me in my former lifetime as an ethics person. It seems to me that if an issue is raised by this type of scenario, it is a question of, and I'm not saying that this is raised in this particular circumstance, but in this scenario, then the question is one of whether a state office holder might be using his or her position and resources available to him or her in that position to advance campaign goals rather than official goals. And if that were to be the case, it would fundamentally be a question for state ethics officials rather than for us. It's not really a federal campaign finance issue. I respect the analysis in the other draft, and I think it's well founded, but I couldn't support it because of where I thought it would lead us down the road. And I appreciate my colleagues' indulgence as I try to get the analysis in what has become draft C to a place where I felt that I could support it and now do support it. So that's sort of where I am and how I got there.
Thank you. You did provide us with a cliffhanger.
Yeah, sorry about that. I was really, like, struggling with this up until the last moment.
Yes.
Well, actually not really. I settled at about midnight last night, so,
really,
you know, we had all morning.
Poor Mr. McGillin here. Where would we like to go at this point? Someone want to make a motion? It's not going to be unanimous, but to move this on. Mr. Barley, do you have?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I will be supporting draft B. I'm not sure. I think there's a group of four who will be supporting draft C, so I'm not sure we need to vote on it, but I'd like to explain my reasoning and why there are certain aspects of C that I'm a bit troubled by and therefore can't sign on to and can't vote for that
please
draft.
Do.
Both draft B and C conclude that Representative Colson can use her funds from her state campaign or office holder account to fund the activities at issue, but draft B concludes the payment for the postcards and the letter would be an in-kind contribution. And I completely share Commissioner Weintraub's concerns about getting in between the relationship between a state representative and her state constituents. But when that state representative puts on a second hat of being a federal candidate and we find ourselves within the window, I think we have to engage in the coordination analysis. And that regulation, I think, simply doesn't permit us to avoid the situation as presented here. To be clear, all of the drafts conclude that it's fine to spend the state committee funds with respect to hosting the senior fair. And again, we diverged basically on the payment prong of the coordination analysis with respect to the mailers for the fair and the letter as the requesters identified. As I read the payment prong in Section 109.21(a)(1), it says that it's met when the payment is made by someone other than a candidate or authorized committee or political party committee, and none of those are at issue here. And so I think it's met. And this conclusion is consistent with the commission's analysis in a prior MER 5815, where the commission found that communications disseminated by an individual who was concurrently a state office holder and a federal candidate satisfied the payment prong. The commission later took no further action based on other facts, but the payment prong analysis didn't change. We've had a fairly recent AO that took a slightly different approach with a payment prong and stated that because the candidate and her agents are paying for the communication, the payment prong wasn't met. And while that AO certainly is on the books, and if another fact situation were presented where a state candidate were seeking to retire the debt and we were nowhere near the coordination window, I would of course agree that it would apply to that scenario, but that's not where we are in this request. I'm also, and certainly AOs sometimes provide us with reasoning and rationale that we want to extend to other cases, but I can't extend it in this case for a couple of reasons. One is I can't find persuasive the rationale that there's an agency theory when it comes to the payment prong. That word isn't in that section of the statute. And while it's true that any non-human entity has to act through agents, that's not what the agency theory in AO in the AO in 2007-01 actually does. Instead, it transformed a state candidate campaign committee into the agent of the federal office holder and her federal campaign for purposes of federal law. So I'm uncomfortable extending that rationale to to this particular case. I worry that the implications of the agency theory as extended in this case could have the effect of nullifying by AO part of our coordination rule, and so I'm not able to go there today. So as I noted, I think all three prongs of the coordination analysis are met with respect to the postcards for the senior fair and the legislative update letter. But because both the state committee and the state, as I understand it, and this is with respect to federal law and not opining on what those entities might be under state law or what may be permissible under state law with respect to those funds, I believe that it appears they could both make contributions to the federal campaign. And so those in-kind contributions in the form of the coordinated communications, pursuant to limits, of course, and appropriate funds, would be permissible. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I share those views. Do we want to discuss it further? Mr. McGinley, you're here, but I think the votes are there for C. So I had a justice tell me one time when he said, when we understand your position, Mr. Walther, stop. So, Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I respect my colleague's point of view on this, and I just wanted to clarify one point, because there was a reference to an earlier MER, which I actually voted for, so I feel the need to explain myself, because I never did issue a statement in that MER and probably should. It was a very odd procedural history, because when it first came forward, that was a time when we had only five commissioners, and two commissioners in a very odd alignment. Commissioner Von Spakovsky and I agreed that we should have dismissed
that. That's odd right from the get-go.
That was pretty odd to begin with, but you know, strange things happen sometimes. Commissioner Von Spakovsky and I thought that we should have dismissed that case at the outset on prosecutorial discretion because it involved a state office holder pursuing state office holder duties, and neither one of us really wanted to go there. Our three colleagues, and I can't remember who was the chairman at the time, so I'll just call them all commissioner, Commissioner Walther, Commissioner Mason, and Commissioner Lenhard wanted to open an investigation. And after we voted 2-3 or 3-2, I never know which vote is supposed to come first, not to dismiss on prosecutorial discretion, I felt uncomfortable with only five commissioners on the commission blocking an investigation that the majority of the commission, such as it was then, wanted to pursue. I didn't want to block that on two votes. I didn't feel good about that. So I gave them the vote to open the investigation to satisfy themselves on what had happened here. In that, not here, but in that case, although I never really was comfortable for the same reasons that I'm not comfortable today with our going forward in that case. In the end, we didn't end up doing anything, although I didn't actually agree with the rationale in the end point either, but it got to the result that I was seeking in the beginning. So it was a very tortured procedural history, particularly for me, but since since it came up and it was mentioned, and I never did write a statement, I felt the need to explain that I was against it before I was for it, and therefore it's sort of consistent with what I'm doing today.
Thank you very much for that explanation.
No one besides me understood what I just said. I recognize that.
And that was Aaron. I didn't understand it all the time either. are we prepared for a motion? Mr. Vice Chairman.
I'll be happy to move it. I move approval of of advisory opinion 2009-26 as set forth in agenda document 09-73-C.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Oh, excuse me. I said aye by mistake. All in favor again?
Aye.
Opposed? Opposed. I'm opposed as well. Do you need to recite that? Commissioner Weintraub, the Vice Chairman, Commissioner Hunter, Commissioner McGowan were in favor. Commissioner Bowerly and I opposed. Thank you, Mr. McGinley. Sorry to put you through the ringer, but it's nice to have you here.
Mr. Chairman, it could be 9-2 if you count all the votes.
Pardon me?
Well, if it's 4-2 and then 5-1, it'd be 9.
Or do you want me to subtract the first? Because we admitted we're not all great on math. Commissioner Weintraub.
I just want to clarify that. I assume that included within the Vice Chairman's motion was authorization for council to do technical amendments. I think there may be a few stray quotation marks around the term seniors fair that we wanted to get rid of. I forgot to mention that before.
That should be assumed to be incorporated within the motion.
Okay. Great, thanks.